Well, good evening. I'd like to get a little bit closer to you so I can see the dimples in your cheeks and, well, sometimes the furrowed brow as well. It just depends on what I'm preaching on. It's how you react, but it's good to be here with you tonight. I have appreciated the week so far. Some of you have been here just so consistently, and that means a lot to me that you come and hear a northern boy like me come and preach the gospel and share the gospel with you. And so it's good to be here with you again tonight. Turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37. We're going to be spending some time in the book of Genesis here this evening. Genesis chapter 37. What a text we have before us as we consider Joseph in our lesson today. Before we get started with that, though, I'd like to read a few real news headlines. These are real news headlines that have come from various parts of the country over the years. And I want you to consider what all of these things really kind of have in common. The first headline that I'd share with you is, this is out of Cartersville, Georgia. Two arrested after a Ten Commandments argument turns violent. Something seemed kind of wrong with that. Yeah, okay. Another one, this one comes out of Londonderry, New Hampshire. Father stabbed in chest by daughter during an argument about the constellations. These are real news headlines. This stuff really happens. This one came out of Akron, Ohio. This is why I moved from Ohio. Woman stabs sister in fight over apple fritters. Okay. Here's another one out of Des Moines, Iowa. Two brothers arrested after fight over peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I had two brothers. I can tell you we never got arrested over peanut butter and jelly. You can have your peanut butter and jelly. Charlotte County, Florida. 77-year-old man arrested in shopping cart attack after an express lane argument. This is out of Waco, Texas. Man arrested for stabbing woman bringing home pizza instead of a chicken sandwich. All right. These all have a common theme, don't they? Common theme is anger. Common theme is anger. We get angry about some things. You know, and sometimes we just think that that's other people. It's not us. But this one comes out of the Welch's back seat of our Honda Odyssey. Girl punches her brother for sitting too close to her in the back seat. Does that ever happen in your car? Happens in mine a lot. Actually, that's not even my Honda Odyssey. That's my mom's. I drove it down here so the kids wouldn't do that with one another, and it still happens. All right. This can be a real problem for all of us. Maybe this hits a little more close to home here in the USA the past year. And I know it hit home when I was in Columbus, Ohio. Downtown was getting burnt down this past year. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana originally. And their downtown was getting burnt down last year. And this was happening in cities all over the country. But there was George Floyd unrest. Riots, fires, violence escalate in several major cities. This has been a problem in our nation. It's been a problem in our nation. Well, it's been a problem since the very early days of humanity. In a field outside of Eden, a brother killed another brother because his worship was pleasing to God. And of course, anger and a lack of forgiveness has a lot to do with what brings us all together. It's been an issue from the beginning, and on Calvary's Hill, there was an innocent man crucified after a group of jealous religious leaders incited an angry mob on Passover Eve. And that, of course, was Jesus Christ. We think it's not really a big deal, but anger, unforgiveness, jealousy, all of those things that are cousins to one another, they can lead to some very, very poor decisions. And maybe it's just me, but it seems like our fast-paced world has also brought with it some fast-paced tempers. You sit at the stoplight for too long and somebody honks at you for holding them up. I was driving out of the church building just about 3 weeks ago, and I was apparently driving too slow in the fast lane as I left the church building, and somebody flew by me on the right-hand side calling me every name that you could possibly call a person. You know, the internet gets too slow, and we lose our temper sometimes. We get ready to throw our phones or our laptops across the room. Listen, when I was in college, I had AOL and I had dial-up. If some of you have never had that, you don't know what too slow is. We're lucky, all right? It can be a church problem too, though. Sometimes families feel slighted by another family and they leave and they go worship at the church down the street. We don't work out our problems. I attended a church at one point in time where there was one family that sat on one side of the building, another family sat on the other side of the building because they'd had a problem years before I was ever there, and they just refused to sit near one another. Eternity in heaven is going to be pretty awful when we have to sit next to some of those people. I'd say we need to work our problems out now before we get there. We could go on and on with the stories. I could probably just open this up and say, hey, do you guys have any stories? I'd be scared kind of to open it up and listen to some of the stories. Stories of marital strife, stories of family bitterness, stories of workplace wrath, stories of road rage, stories of cyberbullying. That's a thing now. Stories of vengeance. But God's people, we ought to know better and we ought to act better. And for this reason, the Bible is filled with examples for our instruction. And the one that we've chosen to look at today is from the account of Joseph. It's found in Genesis chapters 37 through 50. That's a lot of text. We can't read that much text in just our time here tonight. Outside of the account of Abraham, this is one of the longest narratives of the Old Testament. And there are many lessons to be learned. But today, we want to learn a simple lesson about why it was better for Joseph to be long-suffering and to forgive rather than to avenge himself and to get even. So, let's start in Genesis chapter 37, and we're going to start by considering the wrongs that Joseph faced. I want you to take a moment to put yourself in Joseph's shoes, and I want to ask you, if you were in his shoes, how would you react? And we're just going to notice three specific situations to start off here. First of all, let's look at Genesis chapter 37. Let's notice verses 19 through 28. The earlier part of the chapter just mentions that there is Joseph, who is the son of Jacob, and he has, of course, several brothers. And in verse 19, Joseph earlier also has had a dream. Joseph is loved by his father. Some of the brothers hate him and envy him and are jealous of him because of that. The dream that he has had happens to look ahead to the one day when his brothers will bow before him as well as his father. And because of that, they don't like Joseph. And so as Joseph goes out to the fields to check on his brothers, verse 19 says, they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. We shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. They're angry with him. Reuben heard it. This is one of Joseph's brothers. He heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands. And he said, let us not kill him. There is just a little bit of goodness there in Reuben. Maybe not enough to convince all the brothers to let Joseph just go back home and leave him alone, but there's enough to keep him from getting killed. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. Reuben had a little bit of a plan here. He had hoped that if we threw him in the pit, brothers kind of go away, forget about it, I can take him back to dad. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. They took him, they cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Can you imagine? Throw your brother into a pit. There he is in a dark, dangerous place, and you just sit up there and eat your lunch above the pit. How callous do you have to be? Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? We can actually make something out of this. This is what today we might call human trafficking. We don't think the Bible is relevant with today's age. This is human trafficking. They're going to sell their brother to some other people who are coming through who will make use of him. Who knows how they're going to make use of him, but they're going to make use of him. And so they say, come and let us sell him. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brothers listened. And then Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up, lift him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. All right, so here's the first situation. How would you react if, and two, your brother's plotting to murder you only to sell you as a slave to people they don't even know while they eat a lunch up above your pit waiting for the slave traders to show up? How would you feel? How would you feel immediately in that situation? How would you feel years down the road after you've had time to think about that situation? And as you think about that, I just want to ask you this question. Have you ever been betrayed or mistreated by a family member or a close friend? And just think about that. Have you ever had a family member or a close friend that's betrayed you and hurt you deeply? All right, let's take a look at the second situation. Look at Genesis chapter 39. Look at Genesis chapter 39. After Joseph has gone through this, we have just kind of a little change of topic in Genesis chapter 38. Joseph eventually ends up down in Egypt. And look at verse 5. So it was, here he is in the house of Potiphar, who is an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian. In verse 5, so it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house. This is Potiphar making Joseph overseer of his house. Joseph did very well. Joseph learned to gain the trust. Just like Joseph had favor among his father in his father's household, Joseph has favor in the household of Potiphar. And so from the time that he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. And thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. And Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me. Potiphar is away from time to time. Joseph has the full reign of the house. And Potiphar's wife is still there. Verse 8, but he refused. He refused. Joseph is still a person of integrity. Even though he's been through a whole lot, it doesn't change the fact that he still has faith in God and he still tries to live according to the godly ways with which he was brought up. And he says this, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness? And notice this also, it's not just sinning against Potiphar. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And sin against God. And so it was, even though Joseph has said this, he stated where he stands, that he will not give in to this. As she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment saying, lie with me. She has tried to seduce him with no success, but he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside. By the way, this is what I believe when Paul says flee sexual immorality. What do you do when you're in a situation and someone is trying to do something with you? Run. Get help. Call. Leave. Immediately. Joseph shows us that. Just get out of the situation. But she called to the men of her house and spoke to them saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me, and he fled and went outside. Well, that's not how I read it happen. Was that how you read it happen? What she said is not what happened. She lied. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. And then she spoke to him. Potiphar comes home with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. And so it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside. So it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' his anger was aroused." Well, of course, any husband's anger would be aroused. Any husband would be upset when he found out that someone that he trusted tried to take advantage of his wife while he was away. He's being lied to. But certainly if this were a true story, it wouldn't make anyone upset. Verse 20 says, "Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison." All right, so second question, if you put yourself in Joseph's shoes, how would you react to being falsely accused by a woman who was pretending that she was the victim of sexual assault when truly she was the sexual predator? That's the truth of the situation. How would you feel? Have you ever heard of the Brian Banks story? Maybe some of you have. Brian Banks was someone who, when he was in high school, played for California Polytechnic, and he was on track to be perhaps an NFL star. But when he was 16 years old, he was falsely accused by a woman named Juanetta Gibson of rape. He spent 6 years in prison because he was falsely accused. When he was released from prison, he had to spend another 5 years on home parole with a bracelet around his ankle. Until finally Juanetta came out and basically just said, I lied. 11 years of his life spent in prison, and she comes out and says, "I lied." And you know what? She couldn't go to prison for what she did. Statute of limitations had run out. And so she lied and ruined 11 years of his life, and no consequences of prison for her. How would you feel, 27 years old, really hard to get into the NFL after you've missed college and missed all that, those years of training? How would you feel? How do you think Joseph felt when they lied about him? Have you ever been lied about? Someone tells a story one way and you know that's not how it happened, and it was detrimental to you. It could have been detrimental to your career, to your reputation, to how the community viewed you, may have even injured and hurt your marriage. Have you ever been lied about? How does it feel when somebody lies about you? What do you want to do? How do you react? What did you do? Let's just be truthful here. Sometimes we do something. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Sometimes when people lie about us, we don't handle it well. Well, third thing that I want to notice with you, Joseph goes to prison. You read about that in Genesis chapter 40. While he is in prison, we learn something about Joseph. He has this unique ability to interpret dreams. And two people in prison have a dream, the butler and the baker, both of whom had previously worked for Pharaoh. And in verse 5 of Genesis chapter 40, it says this, "Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison with Joseph, they had a dream, both of them, each man's dream, and one night, each man's dream with its own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, 'Why do you look so sad today?' And they said to him, 'We each have had a dream, and there is no interpreter of it.' And so Joseph said to them, 'Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please.' And then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, 'Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine there were three branches. It was as though it had budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it, three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place. You will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. Notice verse 14. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. Joseph is telling the butler, after having been through some terrible times, being sold as a slave, working in Potiphar's house, rising to run the house, then being falsely accused, then being imprisoned, waiting for finally his chance, and he meets someone who knows Pharaoh. And if anybody can get Joseph out of jail, if anybody can grant clemency to Joseph, it would be Pharaoh. And so Joseph says, butler, I've just interpreted your dream. I know what the future is going to hold. This is going to happen. You will speak to Pharaoh. You'll be right next to him pouring wine into his cup. And when you do, please remember me. Please remember me. Verse 15, he goes on to say, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, I also was in my dream. There were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of your dream. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. Baker is not going to be doing Joseph any favors. It came to pass on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants. He lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the butler to his butlership, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted it to them. Verse 23 is key here. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. The one guy that had a connection, Joseph thought was his ticket out of prison, forgets about him. So how would you react to this third situation? How do you react when you've done someone a favor and you've done someone kindness and it seems as though there is no thankfulness from them? They have forgotten all the good that you have done for them. How do you react to good deeds forgotten? You ask someone after telling them some of the best news they'll ever hear, you're going to live and you're going to work again for Pharaoh. How do you feel when they leave you to wither away in prison, not even remembering the one favor you asked of them? Sometimes it's not what people do to us. Sometimes it's what people don't do for us that makes us angry. It's thanklessness. Jesus got upset, right, when he healed 10 lepers. Only one of them comes back and says, thank you. He says, where are the 9? Didn't I heal 10 people and only one person has come back, and that person is a Samaritan? Why didn't anybody else say thank you? Jesus got upset with thanklessness. Shakespeare once said in King Lear, he said, how much sharper than a serpent's tooth is a thankless child. We as parents get upset with that, with our children sometimes. Do you know everything I've done for you? Right? I gave birth to you. We say things. I know some of you moms say things like that. I gave birth to you. I diapered you. I fed you. I have cared for you. I have given up my career. I have sacrificed for you. You can't even say thank you to your mama after I feed you dinner, right? We can get upset about things like that. All right. I believe we do have an indication about how Joseph felt for all of those years. And I want you to see it in Genesis chapter 41, verses 50 through 52. In verse 50, Joseph finally is released from prison. He is promoted by Pharaoh. Eventually, that butler does remember after several years. Joseph, by the way, in verse 46, is 30 years old now. 13 years have passed by. He was 17 when he got thrown into that pit. 13 years have gone by. And he's giving birth to some of his first children here. And when you read Genesis chapter 41 and verse 50, it says, to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came. And he is married, by the way, to the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. Now notice why Joseph names his son Manasseh. For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. What a sad thing. Some people, we have such fond memories of how we were raised and when we were younger. Those are like the good old days. But to some people, that's just something they want to forget. Because they grew up maybe with abusive parents. They were mistreated. They don't have good memories. And for Joseph, because of what happened when he was 17 years old and his brothers just throw him into a pit and sell him off to slave traders, he doesn't have good memories of his childhood. And he names his son Manasseh because basically what that means is forgetting. Now I can think about raising my child. Now I can forget about everything that happened to me and my family. And I can do it right in my home. And then in verse 52, he has another child named Ephraim. And here's what he says about Ephraim in verse 52. For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Basically, what you see in those two names is Joseph names his two kids forgetting and moving on. I mean, that's basically what it is. Those names have some symbolism. They say something to us. They tell us that Joseph had been hurting for years. Those aren't typical kids' names. I don't know if we have any Manasses or Ephraims around here, but they're not very typical kids' names. But that's what those names mean. And it tells us a little bit about how he felt. How would you feel? Well, words that come to mind would be this. I'd be angry. I'd be resentful. I would feel bitter, perhaps. I would be sad. I would be pained. I would be hurt. I would feel betrayed. I would feel abandoned. I would feel used. I would feel mistreated. I would feel lonely. I would feel full of wrath. You could probably name more. And that's how Joseph felt. And Joseph wanted to forget that, and he wanted to move on. He had a chance to start a new life and be fruitful, even though the reason why he was there was because of affliction, and he wanted to start fresh. So those are the wrongs that Joseph had faced. And certainly there was temptation that Joseph had to overcome. And we start to see that as we continue through the Joseph story. And so I have one more question for you. We had the three questions about, hey, how would you feel? Now, in chapter 42, one more question. If you had your brothers, same ones who had started all this and put you through 13 years of misery, the people who had kickstarted years of torture for you, they came back to you years later asking you for a favor. What would you be tempted to do? Because that's what we see in Genesis chapter 42. Jacob saw there was grain in Egypt. Jacob said to his sons, why do you look at one another? I have heard there is grain in Egypt. Go down there. So verse 3, Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin. He was the youngest. And the reason why was Jacob said, lest some calamity befall him. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was governor over all the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. And he said to them, where do you come from? They said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. So if your brothers are in this situation, the same ones that had sold you into slavery and put you all through this, what would you be tempted to do? Well, when that situation has happened and occurred in your life, someone has hurt you, and then all of a sudden they're asking a favor from you, what do you do? Chew them out? What do you do? If you were in the position of a Joseph and you had the right to jail them, put them in jail. You know, punish them. Take these men and just beat them. Joseph had the right. Maybe you flaunt your riches. You know, maybe you say, oh, you guys thought you got the best of me, but look at me now and make it rain, right? Look at where I'm at now. Look at the crown. Look at the robe. You thought that you got rid of me, but I'm actually doing great. Thank you. Sometimes we're tempted to do that. Just brag about it. You thought you hurt me, but I succeeded in spite of you. Maybe you brag about your new job, brag about your children. Maybe you just ignore them completely. I'm not even going to give you the time of day. Here's what we do today, by the way. We blast them on social media, right? Kind of make a little passive-aggressive stab. Sometimes, I'm afraid this is what we do with people like Joseph in the Bible, is we want to turn Joseph into a hero who wasn't tempted to do some of those things. But I do want to suggest to you that even though he's one of our Bible heroes, that I think Joseph wrestled with how to handle this situation, just as we all do and just as we all would. Because he has the power to avenge himself. But should he? You see some of the wrestling in his mind. You see it in the testing of their honesty. He kind of puts a little bit of money in a bag and he wants to see, are these brothers still as dishonest and as ungodly as they once were when I grew up with them? And so he puts them through a test. He doesn't just instantaneously forgive them, I want you to see. He puts them through the ringer just a little bit. In chapter 42 and verse 17, you will notice that he actually does put them all in prison for 3 days. He's probably wrestling with, what do I do? These guys have all just come down, bowed down to me, and maybe put him in prison for 3 days. He roughs them up a little bit. Gives him time to think and gives them time to think. And so we see that him punishing them. We see him isolating them. Notice verse 24. It says that he turned himself away from them and wept. You can tell he's struggling. He's weeping. He never thought that perhaps he would be in this situation. This is unique. And he returned to them again. He talked with them and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Okay, I'm going to release all of you except Simeon. Simeon, I want you to go to jail for a while. And in verse 30, the brothers see that he is speaking roughly to them. Sometimes that's how we feel towards others. You've made me mad. I'm not going to be nice to you. I'm not going to be friendly to you and smile at you. I'm upset with you. I want you to know I don't like you. And so Joseph does a little bit of that. Maybe some of it's a little bit of a head game, but are head games really nice either? He's struggling with how to deal with it. And then he sets up Benjamin when they return. In chapter 44, like I said, a lot of text here, so we can't read all of it. But they do come back. And Joseph told them, if you do come back, and if you want me to help you again, then you're going to have to bring your younger brother with you. And that younger brother is Benjamin. Now, Jacob doesn't want Benjamin to go, because Jacob's already lost his favorite child. That was Joseph. And now the baby, that's his next favorite child. And he is afraid to lose him as well. And the brothers beg and plead with Jacob to just let him come. And said, we're not going to get any help if he doesn't come. And so Benjamin comes back and Joseph tries to set up Benjamin by letting them go home but leaving Benjamin there. Well, that's not going to work for Jacob. The brothers know it. The brothers say, we can't come back home without we can't come back home without Benjamin. And so as we wrestle with forgiveness over vengeance, here's what I want you to see is that Joseph had some temptations. He did go through a period of punishing the brothers and isolating them. He did give them some attitude. Sometimes that's what we do. He did give them some rough speech. He tried to entrap them and put them in a situation that would be to his favor, getting rid of the brothers he didn't like while keeping young Benjamin, who really had nothing to do with putting Joseph in the pit. These are some of the temptations that he had. There are tests, there's isolation, there's attitude, there's entrapment, negotiations. And I'm hesitant to say whether Joseph is wrong or right in all of this. And the reason why I'm hesitant to say that is because the text never condemns him and the text never applauds him either. Sometimes these steps, I just want you to see, they're natural progressions of what we go through mentally as we work through the process of how to forgive someone who has deeply hurt us. However, we do see Joseph processing, and we do see when we get to the end of this account that it leads him to the conclusion that it would be better for him to forgive than to avenge. Now, what helped him come to that conclusion? That's the last thing we want to think about. What are some of the enablers of Joseph's forgiveness? One of the things that enables Joseph to forgive his brothers is that he remembered the dream. Look at chapter 42 and verse 9 again. When they come, it says this, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them. Now keep in mind that during the days of the patriarchs, there wasn't a scripture written down on paper that Joseph could turn to so that he could consult about what God's will was. God spoke directly to the patriarchs. He did to Abram and Isaac and Jacob, and here he had spoken through a dream to Joseph to reveal his will to Joseph. And so the dream was God's will. And so what we see Joseph realizing when his brothers come and bow down is that God's will has just been done. It may have took over 13 years for it to be accomplished, but what God told Joseph through the dream would happen is just happening. And so as we think about how can we forgive other people, how do we make those decisions? Well, I would encourage you to consult God's will. Ephesians 5 says, as we walk among outsiders, it's important for us not to be unwise, but to consider and understand what the will of the Lord is. And so you need to ask yourself, when you're facing situations and problems with other people, not do what do I want to do here? Because sometimes what we want to do are fleshly, carnal, sinful things. But what would God want me to do in this situation? To handle it in a way that pleases Him. Joseph remembers the dream. He remembers God's will. A second thing that helps Joseph forgive his brothers is that he overheard his brothers' regrets. Look at chapter 42 and verse 21, and it says, they said to one another when they realized that Joseph is being harder on them than they expected, we are truly guilty concerning our brother. They think this must be God's punishment to us. This is God's way of distributing retribution to us. And so they say, we are guilty concerning our brother. We saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And Reuben says something that Joseph never realized until now, that Reuben stuck up for him. Reuben said, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? And you wouldn't listen. And therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, because he spoke to them through an interpreter, and he turned himself away from them and he wept. He realizes that my brothers, not only have I been afflicted, not only have I been struggling with what they did to me, but they've been struggling all these years with how they treated me. And they regret it. Luke chapter 17 says, if your brother comes to you asking forgiveness, what do? Forgive him. If he repents, forgive him. These brethren are sorry for what they've done. And when people are sorry, even though they have deeply hurt us, arrogance and refusal to forgive, vengeance, that's not God's will for how we handle it. And when you realize you have done something terribly wrong to someone else, arrogance and pride and excuse making and defensiveness about what we've done, that's not the way to handle it. If you're going to help the process of reconciliation, be a person of remorse. Be a person who truly regrets how you have hurt another person and you have hurt your God by your sins. That will help enable the process to see through to a good end. And so he remembers the dream. He overhears the regrets. And one of the beautiful things I believe about Joseph is that he sees them for who they have become and not who they were. And thank God, he sees us not for our past, but because he sees our potential. Joseph sees that. And so he sees the future. These men have changed. And ultimately he recognizes God's providence. Look at chapter 45, verses 4 through 8. This is the key text here as we draw this to a close. Verse 4 says, Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. He finally decides, I'm ready to tell them who I am, and I'm ready to tell them that I forgive them. And so they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. God sent me before you to preserve life. What does Joseph say? God had me go through all of that. All the evil, and yes, now all of the good. God had me go through that because God had his design and a purpose. God had an end. He says, for these 2 years, the famine has been in the land. There are 5 years left where there will not be plowing or harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. It was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. And so Joseph recognizes God's providence in this. Sometimes both good and evil take place so that God's plan can play out. Several links in the chain were necessary to get God's people where they needed to be so they could be preserved, and Joseph saw himself as a link in that chain. And we too have to keep these factors in mind. Allow them to motivate us to act within God's will. Now, I think I've got about 3 minutes, so I think we can get through this. But let's apply the Joseph principle to ourselves. What's the point of this whole lesson? What are we trying to get across here during this VBS as we think about forgiveness and not avenging ourselves? What's the take-home lesson? Well, it's simply this. Though our feelings may tempt us to avenge ourselves, God's will needs to overpower our emotions. What does Jesus say in Matthew 5? Love your enemies. I know your temptation is to avenge yourself of your enemies, but love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. He goes on to say, do good to those who use you. The decree of Paul in Ephesians 4 was not avenge yourself. Instead, in verse 32, it was be kind to one another. You may want to be full of bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander. That's what you may want to do, but be kind to one another. Tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ has forgiven you. And now our key text, the one that we're tying everything to here in Romans chapter 12. Paul says, bless those who persecute you. Still see the value in those people who have treated you as if you have no value. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, associate with the lonely, never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. And if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, underline this phrase, if you have it written this way in your text, never avenge yourselves. Leave it to the wrath of God. For vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. Isn't that what Joseph did? He fed them. He gave them food. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. Why? By so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head, and we will not be overcome by evil, but we must overcome evil with good. Never avenge yourselves. That's the lesson of Joseph. Forgiveness is always better. It's the only way you can stop the cycle of anger and hatred. I see a bunch of kids back there, I think.